This program is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The recent measles epidemic in the United States has aroused public disbelief that a disease well controlled for decades is reemerging to threaten children in the United States. Controversy surrounds measles vaccination in the United States. Some parents have even avoided vaccinating their healthy children by exposing them to measles-infected children. However, measles has repeatedly reemerged in the United States during the past three centuries or longer, and its emergence patterns and means of preventing and controlling it are well understood. Until measles is globally eradicated, a goal within reach, it will continue to reappear, sicken, and kill almost anywhere, and we must energetically control each outbreak. When we consider modern measles prevention, it is worth recalling what epidemics were like before vaccines and organized public health systems. One vivid account of measles describes the disease's deadly spread through a prominent Boston household more than 300 years ago. In 1713, America's first important medical figure, Puritan minister Cotton Mather, wrote about a measles epidemic in the American colonies, describing not only its epidemiology and devastation, but also the fear it elicited. Mather's account reminds us of the need for such modern medical and public health tools as vaccination, patient isolation, and prevention policies in saving families from the once unpreventable diseases. The following account, condensed from Cotton Mather's personal diary, focuses on illnesses in his own household, including those of his wife, nine children, and a maidservant, over the course of 6 weeks during October through November 1713. 18 October. The measles coming into the town, it is likely to be a time of sickness. 19 October. I must lay hold on the occasion to awaken piety and preparation for death in the souls of the children. 24 October. My son Increase fell sick. 26 October. I must quicken the preparation of my domestics. 27 October. My desirable daughter Nibby is now lying very sick of the measles. 28 October. A very sensible calamity has begun upon the town, with some degree of mortality. 30 October. The spreading of the measles is much worse in families where they conflict with poverty. This day my consort, my wife, for whom I was in much distress, lest she should be arrested with the measles, which have proved fatal to women that were with child, after too diligent an attendance on her sick family, was surprised with her travail. She went into labor, and graciously delivered her of both a son and a daughter, wherein I receive numberless favors of God. My dear Katie is now also down with the measles. 1 November, Lord's Day. This day I baptized my newborn twins, so I called them Eleazar and Martha. 4 November. In my poor family now, first, my wife has the measles appearing on her. My daughter Nancy is also full of them. My daughter Lizzie is likewise full of them. My daughter Jerusha droops and seems to have them appearing. My servant maid lies very full and ill of them. Help, Lord, and look mercifully on my poor, sad, sinful family. 5 November. My little son Samuel is now full of the measles. 7 November. My consort is in a dangerous condition and can get no rest. Death is much feared for her. So I humbled myself before the Lord for my own sins, that his wrath may be turned away. 8 November. For these many months, I have often expressed my fear unto my friends concerning the measles. And now, the thing that I greatly feared is coming upon me. This day we are astonished at the surprising symptoms of death upon my wife. Oh, the sad cup which my father has appointed me. God made her willing to die. God extinguished in her the fear of death. God enabled her to commit herself into the hands of a great and good Savior, yea, and to cast her orphans there too. I prayed with her many times and left nothing undone. 9 November. On Monday, 9 November, between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, my dear, dear, dear friend expired. I cried to heaven. 10 November. I am grievously tried with the threatening sickness of my discreet, pious, lovely daughter Catherine, and a fever which gives a violent shock to the very life of my dear, pretty Jerusha. 11 November. This day I interred the earthly part of my dear consort. 12 November. The epidemical malady began upon this town is like to pass through the country. It might be a service unto the public to insert in the newspaper a brief direction for the managing of the sick. I will advise with a physician or two. 13 November. I hear of some aged and bedrid people, which I design speedily to visit. 14 November. This morning, the death of my maidservant, whose measles passed into a malignant fever. Oh, the trial which I am this day called unto in the dying circumstances of my dear little Jerusha. The two newborns are languishing in the arms of death. 15 November. My little Jerusha, the dear little creature lies in dying circumstances. Though I pray and cry to the Lord, Lord, she is thine. Thy will be done. 18 November. About midnight, little Eleazar died. 20 November. The distressed families of the poor to which I dispense are now so many. Little Martha died about 10 o'clock a.m. I begged that such a bitter cup as the death of that lovely Jerusha might pass from me. 21 November. Betwixt 9 hours and 10 hours at night, my lovely Jerusha expired. She was 2 years and about 7 months old. Just before she died, she asked me to pray with her, which I did, and I gave her up unto the Lord. Just as she died, she said that she would go to Jesus Christ. Lord, I am oppressed. Undertake for me. 23 November. My poor family is now left without any infant in it, or any under 7 years of age. This day I followed my dear Jerusha to the grave, with resolutions, especially what I may do for my own and other children. 28 November. Breathing in the midst of so many deaths, what can there be so needful and so proper for me, as for me to die daily and become a man dead unto this world? 17 December. This day was kept as a day of prayer in the several churches of Boston because of the heavy calamity on the town, and a liberal collection was made for the relief of the poor under the calamity of sickness and growing scarcity. It was a most bitter season. 23 December. I have given to the printer a letter about the right management of the sick under the distemper of measles, which is now spreading and raging in the country. I propose to scatter it into all parts to save many lives. Mather's chronicle of explosive measles in his own family documents a shocking case fatality rate, 5 of 11 infected household members. It also reminds us that emerging and re-emerging diseases such as measles once appeared suddenly to kill almost anyone, a reality with which most people lived until modern times, and with which many in the developing world, who lack access to good nutrition and modern medical care, still live today. The writer of these passages was not just America's preeminent theologian and medical authority, but a husband and father whose grief can be universally understood. One of Mather's most noteworthy sermons, preached 24 years earlier, observed that, "Yet few outward earthly anguishes are equal unto these. The dying of a child is like the tearing off of a limb." Several medical aspects of Mather's entries are noteworthy. From Mather's brief notations, we cannot be certain of the exact dates of onset of most of the illnesses he described. However, he clearly chronicles two serial generations of measles within his family, one of no more than 17 days, the other of no more than 15. These intervals correspond to what textbooks began to describe more than a century later about the patterns of measles spread. Measles seems to have been brought into the household by Mather's son Increase around October 18, 1713. Increase apparently infected his mother Elizabeth and his four youngest siblings. These five became ill on or shortly before November 4. A second generation of measles involved twins born on October 30 and said to be ill on November 14, consistent with infection at or shortly after birth. It is curious that Mather correctly understood measles to be especially dangerous for parturient women. He may have concluded this on the basis of reports circulating among physicians, or because he knew that the same phenomenon had long been documented for influenza. Also noteworthy, and mentioned in his reference letter, but not specifically in the diaries, is Mather's realization that pleuritic fever, probably corresponding to pneumonia, was a serious complication of measles. Viral pneumonia and secondary post-measles bacterial pneumonia are now considered to be among the most fatal complications of this disease. In the pre-modern world, measles was, confusingly, sometimes benign, sometimes deadly. The reasons for this documented pattern remain obscure. Differences in virulence among the various extant measles clades have not been found. The deadliest historical measles outbreaks seem to occur disproportionately in the poor and disadvantaged, especially including young children in orphanages or environments of desperate poverty, or in indigenous persons living in areas of potential relative nutritional deficiency. These findings suggest a key role for host and environmental factors in measles severity. Even a modest deficiency in vitamin A is now known to exacerbate measles severity, and post-measles bacterial pneumonias appear to be much more common in situations of poverty, crowding, and high bacterial circulation. The letter Mathers mentions was published for the benefit of the poor in December 1713. It informed those unfortunate citizens without access to a physician's care about the typical clinical appearance and course of measles, and about simple treatments for it. In recommending generic remedies for unbalanced humors, it broke no new ground, suggesting syrup of saffron and treacle water, tea of sage or rosemary, hot beer and rum, hot cider, hot honey, water with roasted apples in it, shavings of Castile soap in a glass of wine or beer, or tea made of rhubarb and sweetened with a syrup of marshmallow. These were all ingredients that the poor could afford and that might at least be comforting, if not life-saving. The 1713 Boston measles epidemic occurred 7 years after Mather discovered that inoculation might be able to prevent smallpox, and 8 years before Mather passionately advocated inoculations in response to a deadly smallpox epidemic. Mather died 30 years before preventive measles inoculation is known to have been attempted, and 225 years before the first effective measles vaccine was developed. In my opinion, there is little doubt that Mather, were he alive today, would strongly support all reasonable measles control efforts, including universally and publicly enforced vaccination. After all, he was a proponent of smallpox inoculation, and he fought energetically in public forums against all who tried to prevent inoculations on the grounds that it was inherently risky and might theoretically prolong or even start epidemics. He also had lived through the most devastating tragedy of his life, the loss of his own wife and children from epidemic measles. Moreover, as the first person in the New World to espouse an animalcular theory, a germ theory of disease, Mather would surely have been predisposed to accept the scientific basis of immunization, and he surely would have been impressed that aggressive global measles vaccination has, in little more than a decade, reduced the death rate by a factor of at least fivefold and saved approximately 1 million lives each year. It seems highly likely that Mather would not only advocate measles prevention and control on the basis of the most up-to-date medical tools and public health information, but also measles elimination and eradication. Mather's grief and despair, expressed in line after line of his diary, should remind us not only that the risks of infectious diseases like measles are real and ongoing, but also why previous generations of physicians and scientists, supported by a public desperate for medical advances to save their children, worked so long and so well to develop and deploy the very vaccines that some people now avoid and decry. As we debate how best to deal with yet another measles epidemic in the United States, we should look closely at the lessons Cotton Mather and his contemporaries learned 3 centuries ago. Emerging infectious diseases like measles keep reminding us that the past is never dead. It isn't even past. You can read the entire essay, The Past is Never Dead, Measles Epidemic, Boston, Massachusetts, 1713, online in the July 2015 issue of Emerging Infectious Diseases at cdc.gov/EID. If you'd like to comment on this podcast, send an email to eideditor@cdc.gov. I'm Dr. David Morins for Emerging Infectious Diseases.
For the most accurate health information, visit cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO.